Good afternoon and welcome to the Lunchroom on Radio Caribbean International. It is Thursday, the 29th of May, 2025, and this is program number 1381 of the Lunchroom. I'm your host, Calix George Jr. Now, in addition to radio on 101.1 FM, you can also get us at our website, rcistlucia.com, and we are also streaming live on our Facebook page. You just have to search for the official page of Radio Caribbean International. And please be sure to like and share that as well with your friends and family. Now, if you want to call in just a bit to tell us what's on your plate today, the number to do so is 452-3046. Again, 452-3046. You can also reach us at our WhatsApp number, and that is 724-0008. Again, 724-0008. And of course, that is both using messaging as well as calling in. Now, I want to send out some birthday greetings for today. First, Mrs. Denise Holden, happy birthday to you and wishing you a wonderful birthday celebration. Also to Mr. Hassan Ariste, happy birthday to you, sir, and we're wishing you a wonderful day as well. And also birthday greetings going out to Mrs. Odinga Gerson Charles. We're hoping that you're having a fantastic birthday celebration. A look back in time, first of the year 1453, Constantinople, the capital of the Eastern Roman Empire, fell to the Ottoman Turks under Mehmed the Conqueror, ending the Byzantine Empire after 1100 years. In the year 1592, the Korean Navy, led by Admiral Yi Sun-yin, repelled a Japanese fleet in the Battle of Sanshun. And it was the first use of a Korean turtle ship. In the year 1660, on his 30th birthday, Charles II returned to London from exile in the Netherlands to claim the English throne after the Puritan Commonwealth came to an end. And in the year 1953, on this day, Edmund Hillary of New Zealand and Tenzing Norgay of Nepal are the first men to reach the summit of Mount Everest. And that was all part of a British expedition. We now move on to our dish of the day. The daily dish is brought to you the kind compliments of our good friends at Tiles Plus.
One test for your home, I see. Bathroom, kitchen, pantry. Need test for your balcony. Come down to Tiles Plus, satisfaction guarantee. Tiles Plus, Tiles Plus, Tiles Plus. Big test with unbeatable cost. Customer service, A+, did all kind of tests. Come down to Tiles Plus. We also got gasoline and vanity. Boss, boss, you'll see. Come down, don't mind nobody. We got the best tiles on island. Trust me. We are located Land Street in Castries, Bosseju Grosilis, and Slack Street in Viewfort. Telephone number 453-7939. Tiles Plus.
Serving now, the Daily Dish.
And welcome back to the Lunchroom here at Radio Caribbean International. Now, we haven't taken some time of late to look at some of the happenings in the United States of America. Of course, the Trump administration is just about going to be entering into its fifth month in office after being inaugurated on January the 20th of this year. And it has been quite an interesting up and down roller coaster ride, not just for the United States of America, but certainly for the entire world. And some of the policies and actions that have been taken seem to be, for some people, seem to be incoherent, seem to be knee-jerk, seem to be more talk than actual action. And of course, we've seen a lot of movements back and forth in terms of, in particular, of course, in terms of the whole matter of tariffs, what Mr. Trump himself declared as his favorite word. And that has gone through different moods and modes. And we heard about reciprocal tariffs. And, of course, we saw when that came out, and apparently it didn't seem to be what it was in name. And of course, we saw how he then went on to a grand expedition of increasing tariff settings against China, even though the rest of the world were provided some level of reprieve. And then, of course, we've seen since then a sort of a tracking back of tariffs in that regard. Now, of course, according to Mr. Trump, a lot of that is the autumn negotiation, right? The shock and awe effect that he believes he can wield, leading the world's most powerful country, certainly militarily, as well as the world's largest economy. And, of course, even with these types of actions, though, we have seen what appears to be a softening of the U.S. economy. One of the areas, of course, that we've seen some slowdown is the matter of tourism, leisure and tourism. And the United States is perhaps one of the world's largest source markets for outbound tourists, but it also is a pretty important destination for travel as well. And of course, very notable U.S. cities have very strong international brands. Of course, you could think of the likes of New York. The Big Apple attract millions and millions of people every year, but also many others. Atlanta, home to the world's busiest airport, Jackson Hartsfield International, and of course with that comes a fair bit, although a lot of traffic is just passing through. They've certainly been able to leverage some strengths there in terms of visitor arrivals. Of course, very notable brands, I said, Chicago, New York, Miami. Miami being a sort of a gateway for Latin America, and the Spanish-speaking South and Central American region, as well as the Caribbean. And so that, of course, has not fared so well. And interestingly enough, I was watching an infographic which gave a breakdown of the U.S. by employment breakdown by industry. And looking at, of the 340 million Americans, the workforce there makes up about 159.5 million people. So just a little under half, just about half, you would say, of the American population, estimated population, being part of that workforce. And of course, this is data, recent data coming out of this year, 2025, from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. And accordingly, the leisure and hospitality sector or industry is actually the third largest employer within the United States. And there are more people employed in leisure and hospitality than in manufacturing, than in construction, in financial services, and even things like local government. In fact, it's pretty high up there. As I said, with 17 million Americans actually employed within what is what could be seen as leisure, entertainment, hospitality. So very, very important for the U.S. economy. And unfortunately, some of the actions by Mr. Trump have caused for a softening of some of the interest there in terms of travel to the United States of America. Part of it has been a response to issues not related to actual ease of travel. And, for example, in the case of Canada, the United States' neighbor to the north shares their longest border with Canada. And they, in fact, have seen a significant decline in Canadian travel. But a lot of that is really more as a response to the sort of economic play that is ongoing or has been ongoing with respect to treatment of China. In fact, just recently, you would have noted the opening of parliament, the state opening of parliament in Ottawa, Mr. Carney's government coming forward and, in fact, requesting and, in fact, so obliging the king, actually the King of Canada, if you like, who's, of course, the British monarch, Charles III, actually visiting Canada and being the first monarch in almost 60 years to, in fact, actually open parliament in Canada. And that, of course, was seen as a sort of a statement, as a rebuke towards the statements coming out of Mr. Trump regarding Canada becoming the 51st state of America. Of course, there's a lot of interplay there. There's a lot of internal politics with respect to Canada, which Mr. Trump perhaps is no doubt probably aware of. And I speak to some degree, of course, the interests of secession. And of course, that has been a matter that Canada has had to deal with over the years. Of course, it's a bilingual country in the first instance, and we've seen how in the case of Quebec, they have had referenda in the past, in fact questioning whether they want to remain part of a Canadian federation of provinces or whether in fact they want to go their own way. But even more recently, there's been quite a lot of talk perhaps in the western province of Alberta. And in the case of Alberta, on a per capita basis, they in fact are one of the wealthiest of all the provinces in Canada. And that's largely due to oil sands. It's largely due to the oil and gas sector, which is very much strong in Canada, in that province, in Alberta. And it has meant that that state is punching above its weight in terms of its economic importance. And there have been questions there, too, as to whether Alberta should potentially, you know, go it alone or maybe join some other union of some sort. And of course, that is largely because in the way the system works over in Canada, you have federal taxation, and sometimes those taxes get rebalanced to ensure more equitable distribution across the entire country. And so, in the case of Alberta, it doesn't necessarily benefit. It actually is a net loser in that regard, whereas other provinces like Quebec, in fact, are net beneficiaries of that type of arrangement. And so, again, a very politically astute Mr. Trump may very well be playing into some of these underlying sentiments that don't necessarily often get broadly publicized internationally, but may exist. And so, of course, that has caused a bit of a backlash in terms of the interest of the average Canadian to head south for the winter, to go down to Miami and other nice warm spots to spend time, right? And so they've seen, of course, a reduction in Canadian travel, but not just from there. And of course, the other issue that is impacting this entire matter is also the issue of treatment of passengers and treatment of visitors. And we've seen quite a number of those lately causing some stir-ups, even from countries that would traditionally have been, you know, certainly very much welcome to the United States of America, into the United States of America, even from places like Europe, like Germany, for example. And you're hearing of individuals heading across for conferences and their phones are being looked at and scrutinized, and depending on their messages and what is found on their social media, may very well cause for very difficult time getting through passport control. And so because of these stories coming out of the U.S., that too has been perhaps also having an impact on the travel sector, the inbound travel sector for the United States of America. As to whether this is actually just going to be a small dip in terms of the overall outcome for the year 2025, we'll have to, of course, see what that means for the United States. But unfortunately, what is also not helping in this overall situation is even the matter of education. The United States has one of the most sophisticated and well-resourced higher education systems in the world. And in fact, I should not just say higher education, but in terms of the entire education system in the United States, lots and lots of money pumped into these institutions. And again, looking at that breakdown of employment by industry in the United States, private education and health services is in fact the largest group of by industry in terms of employment, over 27 million Americans being employed in private health and education institutions. And of course, we don't really have the breakdown for education, but a lot of that, of course, is in looking at higher education, over 4,000 colleges and universities spread all across the United States. And a lot of them are very much geared towards, yes, the domestic demand. Clearly, that is there. The United States has, I think, after India and China, the largest number of persons with a BSc and higher that exists within the United States of America. But of course, they do depend very strongly on lots of individuals coming from other countries seeking to get access to what are seen as the best colleges and universities in the world, especially in terms of research. And we've been seeing what appears to be an ongoing spat between the Trump administration as well as some of the leading institutions education institutions in the United States of America. And of course, we saw the matter respect of Columbia University in New York City and some very hard approaches there in dealing with especially students who had been part of a number of protest actions that had spread across colleges and universities in the United States. A lot of it really tied to the situation of Israel and Gaza and what was seen to be very unfair treatment to the Palestinian population in and the ongoing war in Gaza. That led to a number of students, in fact, coming out and protesting and having sit-outs. And it appears that there's a desire by the Trump administration to punish those some of those individuals and to send a very strong message. Now, they have couched it as an action based on trying to tackle anti-Semitism, right? Effectively suggesting that the sentiments of these students are anti-Semitic, that they are against the Jewish population. Now, of course, Palestinians are Semitic as well, but I mean, we're not going to get into that debate. But that, of course, is now causing for a number of actions. And of course, with respect to some very, very well-known institutions. And one of them, of course, is Harvard, which is perhaps, I think, what, the first or second oldest of the college of the universities in the United States of America, 18th century institution, and pretty much the United States, the U.S. Department of Education saying that you are no longer going to be accepting international students. And of course, that is a big deal breaker for an institution like Harvard, albeit, of course, highly endowed. The endowment funds of many of these colleges and universities run into the billions of dollars. So they've got lots of backing, no doubt about it, very strong alums, and a lot of interest there and business connections, no doubt. But you've got some critical cities that really depend on these international students. And when you look at a city like Boston, for example, it is highly dependent on a Harvard, on a Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, on a Boston University. I mean, a lot of these universities really drive the economies of some of these cities. I mean, you think again of maybe, of course, over in California, and we speak about Silicon Valley. You can't really separate them from, many of these very important campuses of University of California, for example, like UC Berkeley and the like. And so it is very important because these universities create a whole ecosystem of industry that drive a lot of innovation of research and development. They spur on startup companies, and that's really what drives the U.S. economy in very many ways. So very, very interesting actions at this point being taken with respect to international students. And it's having an impact that's perhaps even way beyond maybe what the intent is from the State Department and the U.S. Department of Education. And even we're being told that there's been an announcement that there's going to be a pause in new applications for student visas for persons into the U.S. So if you already have an appointment, you're okay. But if you don't yet have one, you can end up getting into a bit of a jam for the time being. And the basis for that is the statement by the State Department suggesting that they are going to be looking at reviewing how they, in fact, have better monitoring of the social media platforms and social media presence of individuals who are applicants for student visas. So effectively, they want to ensure that there's better screening of people's social media posts, right, and interactions. And well, we've always known that that's been happening, but it leaves one to wonder, well, if this is something that else that you're now adding on, and it's actually now meaning that you're placing a lot of people on hold who may be looking to go across to the U.S. For study, then the big question is what's the long term for this? What is how is this actually going to pan out for a lot of students who may very well decide, okay, is it really worth it now to be heading across to the U.S.? Will I consider going to some other universities and institutions around the world? And what will it also mean for some of these institutions, these U.S. institutions? Because, of course, we've already been seeing a bit of a trend by some of these colleges and universities to actually set up satellite campuses, to create new campuses outside of the country of origin. And so that's becoming a very popular thing in places like the Middle East, for example, in Dubai. Of course, even right here in the Caribbean, we've benefited to some degree with a number of offshore schools setting up, medical institutions. So could we potentially be seeing Harvard campuses being promoted in other parts of the world? And because, of course, these institutions are going to want us to be able to continue with their legacies and their business models. And the world is so much of a more interconnected space, a more diverse space, that people will potentially be looking to offshore a lot of other opportunities. Of course, some of the major markets that many of these international students are coming from, of course, include China, include India, include some parts of the Middle East, and as well Europe and Africa. And so it will mean then that potentially we may very well see some shifting as well with respect to that. So I'm not sure if it necessarily helps the U.S. economy directly, but this is what we're seeing right now playing out. And we'll have to wait to see perhaps what the next month will bring. That's our dish of the day. And when we come back, we're going to take in our weather report and then head to the phones.
This has been The Daily Dish.
One test for your home, I see. Bathroom, kitchen, pantry. Need test for your balcony. Come down to Test Plus, satisfaction guarantee. Test Plus, Test Plus, Test Plus. Big test with unbeatable cost. Customer service, A+. Did all kind of tests. Come down to Test Plus. We also got gasoline and vanity. Box, dos, you'll see. Come down, don't mind nobody. We got the best test on island. Trust me. We are located Land Street in Castries, Bosses, you Grozy Lanes, and Slack Street in Viewfort. Telephone number 453-7939.
Island style. Oh, yeah. We got the time to make you go. Oh. We got the time to make you say, yeah. We'll have to make the right choice. Island style. Whoa. We got the time that will make you happy. Island style. Oh, yeah. We make your dream come alive in Island style.
We have tiles and tin sets, pieces and ground. Peace out the house out. For the best price and the latest style, take a little drive down to Island Style Car.
We got the time to make you go. Oh. We got the time to make you say, yeah. Quality, price, service, choice. It's all an Island Style.
Visit us at our showrooms in Belarusa, Rodney Bay, on the John Crompton Highway, Castries, and behind Ruby's Gas Station on the Library Viewfort Highway. Or call us on 450-452 or 453-TILE. Island Style, Tile and Bath. When you think tile, think Island Style.
This is Radio Caribbean International. It's now time for the weather news.
So the 1.4 is now time for your weather report as of 12 noon today, presented by Island Style Talamba. The forecast for St. Lucia Valley for the next 24 hours, winds will be blowing from the east near 20 miles per hour, or fully 1 kilometer per hour. The weather partly cloudy to occasionally cloudy, with some light to moderate showers. And there is an advisory here which reads, small craft operators and sea bathers are advised to exercise caution due to brisk winds and above normal seas. The forecast for the Les Antilles over the central Windward Islands and areas further south, partly cloudy to cloudy with scattered light to moderate showers and a chance of isolated thunderstorms. Elsewhere, fair to occasionally cloudy with a few showers. The weather summary, the Atlantic high pressure system will continue to generate moderate to brisk easterly winds and above normal seas across the eastern Caribbean region during the next few days. Moisture and instability associated with a tropical wave will cause cloudiness, showers and possibly isolated thunderstorms mainly over the southern portion of the region today. Another tropical wave located over the western tropical Atlantic is moving westward near 70 miles per hour or 28 kilometers per hour. This wave is expected to affect the southern half of the Les Antilles late Friday into Saturday morning. Also, a plume of Saharan dust haze is expected to cause a a reduction in visibility and air quality over the region from Saturday. Following the passage of the tropical wave. And this was the weather forecast as of 12 noon today, presented by Island Star Talent Back.
This has been RCI's Weather News. For more information, call the Weather Hotline at 454-3452. RCI 101 number 1.
Island Star.
Spaces and ground. Everything you need is on the house out. For the best price and the latest style. Take a little drive down to Island Style Car.
We got the time to make you go. Oh. We got the time to make you say. Quality, yeah. Price, service, choice. It's all at Island Style.
Visit us at our showrooms in Belarusa, Rodney Bay, on the John Crompton Highway, Cass Street, and behind Ruby's Gas Station on the Library Beaufort Highway. Or call us on 450-452 or 453 Tile. Island Style, Tile and Bath. When you think tile. Think Island Style.
And welcome back to the lunchroom here at Radio Caribbean International. Now, of course, you can call in to tell us what's on your plate today. Number is 452-3046. And we think we have some calls coming in already, so let's head to the phone lines at this time. Good afternoon and welcome to the lunchroom. And what's on your plate today?
George Jr., how are you?
Very good, thank you, caller. How are you doing?
You're all right, and everybody?
Yes, yes, indeed. Thanks very much for asking.
Yeah.
And how about yourself?
I was listening to your, what's on the menu?
Dish of the day.
Dish of the day. That's an interesting situation, you know.
Quite.
Yeah, because this thing loaded is so much, you know, that you really have to check out what's going on there to find out, and there's still more to it, than, you know.
Well, some people have suggested that it's anti-thought, anti-free thought, you know, and, you know, attacking universities in that way.
No, I think they're using this something, yeah, because, you know, as you know, America's supposed to be the land of democracy, whatever. You would say things about anybody, anything. Attack anybody.
Right.
But it's just taboo to attack Israel. Eh?
Mm-hmm.
You pay a price for that, a heavy price. But notwithstanding that, I think they're using that as a pretext. But I think essentially they want to go at the Chinese, you know.
Well, because, you know, it has an interesting thought. So you think that they're trying to reduce on Chinese students coming into the U.S.?
Because, you know, in the leading
mm-hmm.
The level of doctorate, the Chinese constitute maybe 80%,
a very, very high proportion of them are coming out of China. Yes.
And they are just about, you know, hundreds of thousands of Chinese students in American universities, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in other words, you know, certain people see that you know, we cannot continue to uplift, educate the Chinese to beat us at our game in the economy.
Yes.
You know, the Chinese is beating us as they send the people, the best people, and we train them to go back home to be on top of us. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a very plausible reason, you know.
Yeah.
Because
from the data I'm seeing from 2023, China represents the second highest number of international students in the United States, 277,400.
Exactly.
And they're only second to India with 331,000. But I think part of that story, too, is that China itself has a pretty strong number of universities that they themselves are developing and growing. So they are, in fact, I think they might be the highest number in total of in terms of the country, the highest number of persons with degrees in the world. Yes. Yeah.
But that level of education, by far, I think, you know.
And of course, you know, the Chinese, that's one of the things that the U.S. is complaining against, that China doesn't follow its copyright and patent rules.
No.
You know, it's learning, it's grabbing in know-how by all means necessary. That's the argument of the United States, and they're not playing fair. So, but.
Yeah. So they're taking what you have to offer, and they're going and use it against you.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that thing. So if we could look at it from all different angles, talk about the thing as a scapegoat, the whole, which I know people are very sentimental about. Israel issue, to go at the university, and also to talk about, they also use the national security.
Right,
issue.
Right.
You know that
these persons may very well have sentiments that might promote terrorism, that sort of thing.
We have to track, they have to track the Chinese, and what information and so on, and be sending back home, what's going to take back home. In terms of secrets and things, they're going to be restricted to just secrets with respect to what they learn in the university. Because they come in states, they live in states too, like you say, they live in the city.
But it's interesting, though, because we've seen some actions by the Trump administration that are seemingly against some of the special interests that you would think that they have. I mean, Trump himself owns a number of hotels, right? And so you would think that something that might impact on travel, right, would be something he would, be against. And then we saw a similar thing with respect to Elon Musk. Elon's...
Notwithstanding that, they cannot take a hold in China as well as economy, because remember, the economy is managed. The philosophy that underpins the economy, the management of the economy in China is much different from that in America.
Totally different, yes. Certainly.
You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. You could be as rich as you are. You have to submit to the government,
They could, in fact, come in and just take it away from you.
They could just come and take it from you.
Yes.
You understand? Yeah, So it's just that business, big business. Musk could never feel big enough if he was in China.
But interestingly enough, I think your dear friend, Mr. Musk, seems to have parted ways with Mr. Trump.
Yeah, but because he gets what he wanted. Have gotten out of the whole thing what he needed, so he get out of the way.
Oh, you think so, eh? Or maybe he's trying to cut back on his losses, because he has certainly has suffered, in terms
now,
of.
Now, colleagues, on another matter, we switch in, eh?
Okay, sure.
On another matter, I was listening to a talk show earlier today.
Right.
Lady, a Saint Lucian who lives in Burkina Faso. There was an interview for her.
Okay.
She and the host of the show and so on. And she always outlining the situation, the way she sees it, the best she sees, the way she sees it.
Mm-hmm.
She sees it as somebody, with a bird's eye view.
Right.
And obviously, she was seeing, a lot of favorable things, things like 90-something% of the people, the population is in on it, on what he's trying.
Right.
What they are trying there, rather than he did. trying. And a particular, when she came off, a particular caller called and said, well, he said to the host, he should question her where she got that 90-something percent thing from, you know, but the host was trying to say, maybe it's not exactly that, but, you know, I mean, she just used that number.
In terms of her own interaction with people, perhaps, and the sentiment is.
Okay, all right, that being said, the person also suggested that if it's so popular, he should call elections and ask people to vote for him and for his government. So the lady called back and said, you know, if it's so thing, you need to establish some democracy, all right? So the lady called back and said that these people are people. They have been complex from, you know, I mean, and she outlined the history of that the people, you know, to a certain extent. And she was suggesting that these people have, within their own cultural scope, you know, I've had democracy long before the West established democracy. You understand? So, and she was pointing out that we've seen democracy in a Western context. And she was saying that these people, the people that support the government has, it mightn't going to be one man, one vote directly, calling an election on a particular day or a date or whatever, and campaigning or whatever. But it's done through their system, the way they exercise democracy. And they have their local organizations like the Market Women. You know, they're titling it, and they express themselves through their representatives. So in other words, this was so very important, Calix, I find, that we define democracy as we know it, you know? And we know it through the eyes of, you know, the people who sort of enlighten us to their form of democracy. That is in the West, because that's where we live and that's what we always know. But ignorant to a great extent on what takes place in a lot of other, and that's not peculiar to just in Africa, but maybe other cultures in Asia and so on, that we accuse of not being undemocratic, you know, and feel that we should you know, destroy what they own to replace it by our concept of democracy. You understand? So that I find interesting, you know. So she was saying, no. The people have they have their democracy, but not the kind of democracy you want. You understand?
Well, I guess they have some form of representation, right? And
exactly.
I think the representation comes in. Sometimes maybe it might be through tribal groups, through tribal lines.
Much more than what we could say in states in a lot of Western democracies now, you know. You know, a lot of people don't have representation. Though they vote for certain, to instate certain governments and so on. And lastly, quickly, I'm switching again here.
But I suspect that person may, because I know there's a regular caller, Julia, who calls in, and she's mentioned a number of times that she has, I think, a niece who lives in Burkina Faso. I'm wondering if that, in fact, is the same individual. Maybe so. I'll have to find out.
It's interesting. I don't know if you could get in touch with that particular lady.
Right.
And have her on your program.
You might try to do that, certainly. Yes.
To have her, to hear her talk about what is really going on. And yesterday you had Mr. Daring there.
Yes, Chris Daring.
That was a nice thing. Nice interview. But I think without offending you, I think Bering was using your naive position with regards to the issue of our cricket. I think Bering essentially is saying, and maybe rightfully so, and this is how it has to be, like, it is what it is. Cricket is not what it used to be. What it used to mean to us, the nostalgia, his parents used to get out of, you know, this and so on, and this is over, it's all about money now.
I think that's pretty much what he was suggesting, yes.
That's what he was suggesting, it's all about money now. And do I say, yes, the people have to live, people have to eat, the governments build the stadium and things too, and they have to get the money back.
Mm-hmm.
Tourism has to benefit, and we have become, cricket has changed.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm seeing there is that, yeah, so we, you know, yeah, we changed, but should we change to the extent of we cannot even identify who we are? Eh? Hey, colleagues?
To the extent that we cannot identify who we are. And what do you mean by that?
We love cricket right now. It's almost like being mercenaries. In other words,
so in other words, you're saying that the whole idea about a West Indian identity in cricket it has been watered down, and then of course people are more keen to pursue the various leagues, whether it's the IPL and other leagues around the place. So that's where they are now, really.
And that is not only peculiar, but because you see what the people with all the money doing.
But caller, I mean, why is it that we sort of accept that in terms of football, but in cricket, it's something that we it's anathema. Because if we had a St. Lucian who was in, let's say, the Premier League, you know, playing maybe for some team, maybe Man U or Arsenal or whatever, wouldn't we just be happy about that one individual playing as a St. Lucian?
Well, I'm not saying we shouldn't be happy that these people playing for big money and so on. I'm not saying that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not suggesting that. But what I'm saying is that look on the other side of that. And I'm glad you mentioned football. Because look at Brazil, for example.
Right.
You know, Brazil has in a situation like that. It doesn't seem to be competitive or in a position to challenge to win a World Cup.
You mean as a national team?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yet still they provide
some of the best players in the world.
With the best players?
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
And so it is with Africa. So what are these people doing? They're taking off your resources. They're sucking you dry, all your talent.
Mm.
All right? Them Europeans. Because they have the money, pay you money. And while your own cannot stand on its own again. And we have to be very careful of that. You know, because see who wins the World Cup every year, anytime the World Cup comes around.
Mm.
Right now, the only South African team that could look competitive to win a World Cup, and they have shown that, is Argentina. You know, Brazil is not. And look, Brazil, why did Brazil take so long before deciding, well, the Brazilian coaches just cannot make it? You know why? Because that's the sense of pride. They feel it's a tender pride to have a coach that's not from Brazil.
Mm.
And they finally yield, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier this year, they appointed Carlo Ancelotti, who is an Italian, to coach the national team because they realized they need, in spite of having all these top players making so much money, you know, benefiting the economy, you know, the whole structure, the whole standard, everything else is falling. You know, and the name, the brand Brazil is not saying anything anymore.
Mm.
You know, the Brazilians are within the context of playing for Barca or Real Madrid or Man U. Then you know, that's where they get the props. But as Brazilians, they fail all the time. And the same thing with the African players, when they represent the countries, they cannot seem to compete. And they're in that situation all the time. Mm. All the time. They cannot rise because this league is not trying to, they're giving you enough money. You know? In other words, free up some and keep the majority in the shackles.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting situation, and it's like if you were into basketball, right, you would probably gravitate to where basketball is most profitable. You'd want to go to the United States. If you were into cricket, I suppose you would gravitate towards India, maybe the Middle, because there's some Middle Eastern countries that have some leagues as well. So I think people are gravitating to where the sport is, I suppose, most profitable. It's difficult to break that, though. I don't know how you're going to, especially in the case of football, it's so very much the European strength there is so dominant that, Well, the World Cup is, yeah, I mean, obviously it's something that has a lot of nostalgia to it. And these national-based tournaments, whether it's World Cup, Olympics, there's a lot of nostalgia tied to them, and also a lot of national pride, of course, tied to them. But then I guess on the, you know, the monthly, daily, yearly cycles that these sports have, the leagues are where it's really at. And I guess in the case of Brazil, they haven't, I mean, it's not to say that they don't have their own leagues, but you still find that the best of the best will be gravitating to where you have greatest profitability. They're not going to the U.S.
You seem to be flagging that as if I don't have a problem with that.
You don't have a problem with that? Okay.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Because that happens then Maxwell and Warner and all these guys. But these guys want to see Australia as number one still. Australia, the brand.
Okay.
You understand? So when they are called upon, they respond. But our fellas don't respond. You understand the difference? You know? And so we the brand thing, just we cannot even get a full test series again.
Mm.
Two matches, three matches.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is West Indies, you know, it's like we begging and we depending on IPL to hand out money to for us to survive. You understand? It cannot continue that way, my brother.
Mm.
Because when Jamaica was a force, Trinidad was a force, these societies were not at this state. I mean, you could correlate the decay in the social decay in our society to the fall of these kind of institutions that gave us things. So you can't say you're surrendering all of that just for hotels to make more money, for individuals to make more. You must find some sort of balance, my brother.
But the
kind of standard on your players too, because all other countries do that. These people answer the national, the patriotism comes out, you know, big time.
Mm.
Notwithstanding the desire to make enough money to sustain themselves. You know what I'm saying?
I take your point. I'm just thinking, is the issue though that we just simply don't have enough of the local competition? By local, I mean, I'm talking about, you know, at a regional level as well, you know, that we're not generating enough cricketers. We're not bringing out enough individuals who have that interest.
Yeah, because we're not competitive.
What?
Our standard is so poor. So when you tell me, a man like you, Puran is an international superstar. Puran play every league. Puran is about maybe the richest. hasn't played four or five. I think he has only played about three or four 50 overs games.
Mm-hmm.
He has never wanted, he has shown the desire to play test cricket or even you know, our local competitions.
Mm-hmm.
Just 2020. And he's one of our most talented batsmen. And obviously, Warner started out in 2020, and he made it big. He became number one, but his ultimate desire was to play for Australia. And we see the same thing happening with all the young Indian cricketers that are coming through. A lot of them.
But I don't know, Colin. I suspect maybe, and it's the nostalgia that you may have still, to believe that test cricket is where it's at, right? And I know there are some people who say that this should be the true, pure form of the game.
It is important because, remember, we don't learn resilience. We don't learn patience and confidence, you know?
Yeah, but caller, I mean, we don't ask for those things. I understand what you're saying, and these are good values to learn and all that, but we don't ask the footballers and the basketballers. We don't say that, well, you're not playing a match for a whole day, so therefore you're not really resilient. Or, you know, I mean, the sport has changed quite a bit, and I'm not knocking test cricket. I believe it's a wonderful form of the game, but I just don't know if that we can necessarily be only looking at our success now on that bar.
I didn't say only. You're not putting these words.
Not only, but placing it as the most important aspect of it now.
No, I tell you, it's important. I never say the most important.
Because we're doing pretty well. We're doing pretty well on the other fronts. You know, reasonably well, I guess you could say.
Right now, we are doing pretty well in no front.
Okay.
So it seems to be a downward slide.
Across the board. All right.
Yeah, in the game. Notwithstanding, we have the people will come out in numbers when we're having a 2020 game because, like Daring was saying, people are even.
No, but so I'm saying, but for a person like a Puran, for example, if what he is good at is a shorter form of the game, and that's what he wants to specialize in. I mean, should he not just be able to do just that? And he should not be judged because he's not playing a test cricket or a 50-over match, you know. That might be what he wants to do, and it works out well for him.
Yeah, because it's a democracy. I'm saying, nobody's saying, but, you know, it all started from what he got from West Indies cricket, you know.
Agreed. Eh? Yes, definitely.
That's what nurtured him, you know.
That's what nurtures a lot of them, so, right?
No, but to have a sense, no sense of wanting to...
Of giving back.
I mean, is something wrong with that?
Mm.
You know, is something wrong with us? And you know.
Yeah,
when
well...
When we win the couple of things there, we had Chris Gill, who do human service to West Indies all forms of the game. Also, Marlon Samuel.
Mm-hmm.
These guys were very instrumental, and these guys played all forms of the game right now. We're not competitive because we have other fellas that they know the game, but they could only bat for one over, two overs, and make a quick 20.
Mm.
And you come, because money flowing. Now, we cannot build ourselves. We cannot build a nation of people.
All right, caller. Thanks very much for that contribution. We're going to have to end it here. And, of course, we'll be back again tomorrow for another program, hopefully, God willing, of the Lunchroom here at Radio Caribbean International. Have a good one.